Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, we are back again. You're with Dr. Harris. Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter show. We have a hot show tonight. We have a historical show tonight. We are here today on, I believe it's Monday, the 28th, Monday the 28th, here in Mississippi, Fresno, California, right smack in the middle of California. I always say right in the middle of nowhere. But anyway, that's where we're at. We'll be thankful for where we're at. We're living in a place that has the highest concentration of poverty next to Katrina. We also living as black folk here, living in the idea of we are the 10th worst city for black people, African-American people to live in. How about that? How about that? The only city on the West Coast of Texas, the 10th worst city for black people to live in is Mississippi, Fresno. Take that to the bank. Digest that. And tell me how your stomach feels. We are... I had to take a little drink there. My throat is getting dry. But nevertheless, we're just happy to be here. We'd like for those to call into our radio show. Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter show. Tonight we'll be talking about why was Black Wall Street destroyed? Why was Black Wall Street was destroyed? June 1st, 1921, Tulsa, Oklahoma. It was destroyed. And the question is, why? Why was it destroyed? Why wasn't this thriving community passed down to my generation in the 21st century? How can someone have the nerves to destroy a city that they did not build? Think about that. Who has the right to destroy anything if you're not God? What do you think about that? So we're here. We're gonna dialogue this. We're gonna dissect this right now. We're gonna hopefully we have callers, see a callers online already. Again, welcome to our show. You know, in the morning time, you know, like the, you know, I was playing the Malcolm back in I believe he was in L.A. So every you know, you're getting up, you want to tune in. Usually we start playing the speeches probably about maybe 5:30 in the morning. I'm going to be playing different speeches like Fannie Lou Hamer, Marcus Garvey, you know, just a lot of the folks that's passed on, Huey P. Newton. And I think it's important that we go back in time and revisit the conversations that our ancestors had. I believe that today we have the antidote, we have the blueprint to liberate our community. I just think that we just have to go back and look at and research how our ancestors did that. You know, one of the things I always said, I find very interesting is how back in 1921, our ancestors, if you read the documentary, you will see that, and I'm just going to read a little bit of it, and we'll get more into this. 600 successful businesses was lost, 21 churches, 21 restaurants, 30 grocery stores, 2 movie theaters, plus a hospital, a bank, a post office, a library, a school, a law office, and half a dozen of private airplanes, and even a bus system. That was what our ancestors built in 1921, which was all destroyed by white racist Ku Klux Klan and the U.S. government. And what's interesting is that our ancestors in 1921 didn't have Instagram, didn't have Facebook, didn't have all these different social medias that we have today, like I said, Facebook, emails, what else we have here, Snapchat and all this stuff, you know, even Blog Talk Radio, they didn't even have Blog Talk Radio. So, but yet at the same time that our ancestors was able to build community with no resources that we have today. Now we have all this stuff today, and we and as a black community, we're more dysfunctional people right now. It's hard for us to work together. I'm still trying to figure that piece out. But why was it hard for our people to work together back in 1921? Those are questions that I think that we need to talk about and figure out. You know, we can keep complaining. You know, we can keep talking about, you know, who's at fault, but what is the solution right now? We're looking for solutions right now. We know what the problem is, but what is the solution? I think another problem we have right now is we have a lot of middle class Negroes that's making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year. That their first instinct is to move, quote unquote, out of the ghetto, right? We're going to move up north. We're going to move in a white community. We're going to move away from all of the trouble as they think that they're moving away. But actually, there's trouble everywhere. You know, when do we decide that, you know, we're going to drop our anchor in the ground and we're not going to go anywhere and we're going to make things right where we're at? I think it's just so easy right now how white America tells us to go get their education and go get a job and then go live in a neighborhood, while our community is just an abandoned building. For instance, take West Fresno for a second. I live in West Fresno. I wouldn't want to live in any other part of Fresno. I wouldn't want to live in Woodward Park. I wouldn't want to live in Clovis. I wouldn't want to live anywhere but in West Fresno. Why? Well, here's the reason why. Is that I think that West Fresno built Fresno. I know that it did. This is where our ancestors came out here to when they came from the South. They came into to West Fresno to live, and all the white folks, the Jews and the Germans and all them moved out, and they moved up north, right? But when they moved up north, they took all the resources from West Fresno, right, to where now you drive West Fresno, it's like two different cities. You drive North Fresno, Woodward Park, blindfold someone, take them to West Fresno, you think you're going to travel to a whole different city, but you're in the same city. You know, it's the tales of two cities. And I think that it comes a time where people need to stop it needs to stop being so we have someone just wrote on the Facebook Live, it said, would not be a ghetto if you make it beautiful. That's a good point. I mean, when do we stop and just, you know, make it beautiful, you know, instead of running everywhere? See, here's the part about Negroes getting good jobs, right? They take their tax-based money and they run it and they move up north in white communities. So that means you buy groceries up there, you buy gasoline up there, you pay taxes up there. When now I work in the ghetto, or I go to church in the ghetto. But yet you're taking all your resources out of so quote unquote that you call it the ghetto, and taking it into neighborhoods that's already beneficial. So, you know, we have a problem. We have a big problem. And so tonight we're going to be talking about Black Wall Street. The phone number is 619-924-0872. Also, if you notice on my Facebook, I created a blog talk, kind of like an announcement. Hey, Irene. Thank you, Irene, for tuning in. Crystal, thank you, Crystal, for tuning in. Alonzo, thank you for tuning in. Who we have here? Crystal, thank you for tuning in. Just giving a shout out to all of these folks who's tuning in to our show live stream.
all over the world, like Stephanie. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate y'all support. Donna, Carter, thank you for tuning in. Really appreciate, you know, you guys tuning in. Because y'all know I do heavy hitting. I speak truth to power. No one can buy me. I don't have a clearance tag on me. I will die a freedom fighter, a revolutionary. And we don't have too many black men in Fresno to say that. Unfortunately, I believe, Irene, I want to thank you for the Brown Berets for considering when I made the call out that we wanted to walk the hood. And I needed 20 strong, not scared black men. And out of the 20, I got two. And I was happy to get the two, but I was sad that we couldn't get 20. And so the women were ready to walk the hood with me, but I told them they needed to, you know, stand down because I want to give the men an opportunity to step up, to go out and walk the community with me. So since our men, and we had another brother who wanted to come, but he had car trouble. And there were some brothers who told me they was going to come and, you know, I would get all that promise and stuff. So since the men, quote unquote, don't want to step up in Fresno, then we're going to roll with the women. So I've given the women the microphone. I've given them the platform. I've given them the stage. And now we're going to work with them, let them lead. Now it's time for the women to lead. And so I'm going to just create a pathway for them, block for them. We will be cooking breakfast for the women so that the men will. And we're going to stand down and let you all talk, serve you, and you give us the marching orders and what we need to do in our community. So I'm tired of talk. I'm tired of people just grandstanding and all this other stuff. This is about our babies who are dying in the streets. Black and brown, and so we're going to do something about it. So thank you, women, for your support. I'll watch my Facebook. I will be blowing a bugle, letting you know what date we're going to get together, and so we can talk and figure out what we need to do to do an assessment on our black and brown community. This is not a police thing. I don't roll with the police. I do nothing with the police. If I have to deal with the police, this is in a meeting form. I don't want their money. I don't want anything from them. All I want is to hold them accountable in our community. But you won't have too many black men say that. Really, you don't have any black men that will say that publicly here in Fresno, because many of our men are scared. But anyway, we're going to get into the show here about Black Wall Street. Why was Black Wall Street destroyed? That's the question tonight. Why was Black Wall Street destroyed? And what I'm going to do here, I'm going to play just a little bit of the documentary because I want you to hear firsthand from the folks who were there. Just a little bit. I just want to play just a little bit of the survivors. I think one of the survivors, the last survivor of Black Wall Street, just died at the age of 92. So let's go ahead and play that just for a second so we can kind of get a feel, get the framework of the show tonight. And I'd like for you all to call in at 619-924-0872.
Well, I'm here. And what is that? Olivia Hooker. Hooker.
Yep. Let's try a different documentary. That one was kind of noisy in the background.
Tonight we're going to report a story that's almost 80 years old, but it will come as news to most Americans as, frankly, it did to us. This country's most violent race riot didn't happen in Newark or Watts or Detroit. It happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in June of 1921. For decades, city officials covered it up. The history books barely mentioned it, and people, white people that is, hardly ever talked about Tulsa burning. But all that's changing now. The state commission has begun investigating the riot and is already raising tough questions about what today's citizens owe yesterday's victims. And it's revived memories for George Monroe of a night 78 years ago when his mother saw four white men walking up to their house carrying torches.
My mother told us to get up under the bed, and we got up under the bed. We could just see just their feet. They came in and set fire to the curtains, and one stepped on my fingers, and my sister put her hand over me.
All right, we're going to open up the lines right now. You're with Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. Why was Black Wall Street destroyed in 1921? Please call in to 619-924-0872. We heard some of the survivors. We heard the documentary, what happened to Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. One of the questions I would like for someone to call in and answer this question. Why is this not in the history books of America? Why is this not part of the curriculum in the public school system in America? Why is it that black children, white children, yellow children, especially our black children, know nothing about Tulsa, Oklahoma that was destroyed in 1921? 21 churches, 21 restaurants, 30 grocery stores, 2 movie theaters, hospitals, banks, post office, libraries, schools, law offices, airplanes, a bus system. Why is none of this information put in the books of the public school system here in America? The dollar circulated 36 to 100 times before it left the community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Our ancestors built Tulsa, Oklahoma with their blood, sweat, and tears. How would you feel today if someone just came to your home right now, right where you sit, and knocked on your door and told you to get out and stole and looted your home and then turn around and started shooting your loved ones? How would you feel about that? Would you feel okay about that? Would you feel happy about that? Would you feel angry about that? You know, I think we have gotten too, I think just because many of us is able to get an education, to get a degree, to get a bachelor's or a master's, I think we have amnesia. We forget about the real history of America. This Tulsa, Oklahoma, listen, there was over 30 to 46 towns was built by black people after the war. 30 to 40, 40 something towns were built, and all of them was destroyed by white Ku Klux Klan and the U.S. government. How would you feel? I mean, look at it like this. Look at all these white farmers we have in America right now. You best believe that their farms are passed down to their children, to their children, 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 children. Tulsa, Oklahoma was not passed down to us. It was destroyed. It was from the air. Our ancestors was I'm talking about 36 blocks of a thriving community was just destroyed. Children were deputized by the sheriff. Shoot. And that time, shoot niggas on sight. Shoot Negroes on sight. They looted their home. I mean, how do we digest this today? Many of you don't even know about Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921. Many of you don't even know your history. All you know is about Dr. King. I have a dream speech. That's all you know about. You don't know nothing about Malcolm X. You don't know nothing about the Black Panther Party. You don't know nothing about the Red Air Tailman. You don't know nothing about Marcus Garvey. You don't know nothing about Fannie Lou Hamer. You don't know nothing about Shirley Chisholm. You don't know nothing about Rosa Parks. You know, because America has always wanted you to just think that that Black history is just really around Dr. Martin Luther King. And that is so wrong that you allow this country, which has always hated us since day one, coming from Africa on the first boat called Jesus, headed to the American soil. I want you to call in to 619-924-0872. 619-924-0872. Don't be scared. Call in. Let's have a conversation. You know, I'm not going to put you on blast. We're just having a conversation. And that's one of the problems now we have here in our Black community. Nobody wants to talk. And then when we do get together, everybody want to scream and holler and fuss and point fingers. Let's have a conversation on us, about our community, about how we can rebuild, how we can work together, how we can help build consciousness in our community. I just think that, you know, we have to do for self or be a slave. I think it's at a point right now where people have just decided that they're going to get in a recliner seat. You know, it's not my problem. It's not happening to me. It's not my children. But just keep living a little while longer. As long as you Black and brown, trust me, racism is gonna come up on you one day, and it's gonna hurt you and it's gonna hurt your family. I just find it interesting today how we have allowed the government to just co-opt Black history. Look at this. Here it is. About 2 weeks ago, City of Fresno has a week-long Martin Luther King programs and putting a wreath at Courthouse Park and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, I give credit to those who, the organizers who mean well. You know, but, you know, at the end of the day, if injustice happened to your son or daughter, is all those marchers going to be there? Are they really? Is all those marchers going to be there at your disposal to fight for justice? No, we have allowed the government to turn Dr. King holiday, his birthday, into some type of recreational political day to where we grandstand. I mean, I don't understand how is it that the police department here in Fresno, if anybody should be embarrassed about anything, I believe our Chief Dyer should be the most embarrassed person in the world. You know, he has the most corrupt police department. It's worse than in Chicago. It's worse than in L.A. It's worse than in Oakland. You know, that our police department here planting guns on Black kids, his right-hand man, Deputy Chief Foster. We have a caller just calling in. I'm going to get you caller at 3366. I mean, he is his right-hand man. I'm talking about Chief Dyer. I have no reservation in saying his name. Many know that I go up against the police department many, many times for messing over our children and shooting our people in the back. And, you know, he should be ashamed. I mean, I don't even understand how come, why is he still working? I mean, if Deputy Chief Foster was the chief of police of Fresno and Chief Dyer was the one who got caught selling heroin in our community and the FBI found out, the white folks up in North Fresno would do, they would burn City Hall down to say, you know what? Get Chief Foster out being the chief of Fresno. He's an embarrassment. He's a disgrace. But because Chief Dyer is white, you're right. If you're Black, go sit in the back. And that's just what's happening today. See, I will say what all of y'all are scared to say. I will say what you're scared to say. And I've been saying it for 34 years. It's a corrupt police department. But it's interesting how he can come out with hot dogs and bounce houses in West Fresno, pat your kid on the head at the age of 5 and shoot him in the back at the age of 13. And all they do is just give out hot dogs and play some music and your little girls and boys shaking their butts and all that type of stuff. Well, you should be bringing them somewhere like the Freedom School, teaching them some real consciousness knowledges about who they are, their history, teaching them respect, you know, teaching them about consciousness. But we don't do that. We don't roll with the people who is really trying to empower our community and our children. So many people act like you just cannot do anything unless the police department is there. Listen, there was a community meeting here in Fresno about 2 months ago, and I hope our caller who just called in at 3366 will chime in on that meeting. I wasn't there. But the report I got was that there was three women there, and Chief Dyer was there. And they just started asking questions. I mean, they wasn't hostile. They wasn't getting loud. They were just asking some questions to the chief of police. And at the end of the day, he got offended with three women asking him questions. Three women. Now, these women wasn't armed with no guns. They wasn't gang members. They were just asking questions about their community that they pay taxes for. And like it or not, they pay his salary. So the reality is that the chief of police works for the community. We don't work for him. So if we don't like something that he's doing and his officers are doing, he's damn right we have a right to question him publicly, okay? But he turns around and tells the women, oh, if I knew I was going to be ambushed like this, three little bitty women, he said, I would have brought backup. And what do you mean you're going to bring backup for three women in a community meeting? See, this is the mindset that law enforcement has, not just here in Fresno, but across the country. It's across the country. And this is why we have so many police issues in our community. We want to go to 3366. Welcome to Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. We were talking about why was Black Wall Street destroyed, but go ahead and feel free to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
In response to why Black Wall Street was destroyed, I would like to ask a different question, which is why wasn't it able to be built again? You know, because it's been places all across the country, cities all across the country destroyed, whether from natural disaster or war torn, you know, especially after the Civil War. But these places were able to rebuild. So why wasn't Tulsa rebuilt to that glory? What was missing? What was lost after it was destroyed? Because after a destruction, you can rebuild. A lot of privileged Americans do rebuild after a disaster.
So let me kind of maybe answer a little bit of your question. So when earlier, I don't know if you were listening when I was playing a documentary. That's one of the things I do now on my show is to give framework about whatever topic we're talking about. So we got it from the horse's mouth. And what was said was that our Black people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, did try to rebuild the community, but the power structure in Tulsa, Oklahoma passed legislation that if any piece of property was burned, that they could not rebuild there. That was one of the reasons why, because of how the power structure was just trying to find ways to make sure that the Black community did not rebuild. Because the fact of the matter is the Black community in 1921 looked it better than the white community neighborhood. So that was one piece. But even talk about Allensworth here in Fresno in California. It's the only Black city in California. Why hasn't nobody invested money down in Tulare to rebuild Allensworth?
Well, you know, just how you talked about how the fires, they said, okay, you can't rebuild on anything that was destroyed by fire. Well, in Allensworth, it was the water. They used the water. Well, nobody can inhabit this Allensworth anymore because the water has, you know, it's poisonous. And, you know, a person can speculate, well, how did the water get poisoned? You know, it could have been just not understanding how to use or whatever the water or what was going into the water, or it could have been something that was brought in and contaminated the water, you know. So that was the whole thing about not rebuilding back in Ellensworth, is now it's like contaminated. It's a no live zone, you know. So similar to Tulsa, you know. But the crazy thing about these different policies and so forth that was put into place after they destroyed these places is those are like the same type of tactics that are still used to dismantle or try to disable us from building those Black Wall Streets again, those Ellensworth again, you know. So that's just my perspective on it, is that whatever stops them from rebuilding in Tulsa and stop them from rebuilding in Ellensworth, and we probably can name a number of other Black cities that was destroyed. You know, those are the same things that stopping us or are the obstacles for us to rebuild now. But me, I'm just a diehard, love my people, have all hope in my people, faith that we have the knowledge and we have the expertise to do it, but it's that big question. How do we unite? And how do we basically out-strategize and outsmart the people who are putting these obstacles in place that prevents us from rebuilding?
Let's talk about institutions right now, because I think when we look at the destruction of something, I think that's really, really huge. Because institutions are educational, number one. Number two, they're independent, which independent means that there's no outsiders running it. And so I think that when we read about how there were the institutions that were there, for instance, like right here, when I read, it says that, you know, there were the businesses, you know, there were 600. I mean, think about this. Let's just do timeout, like we're playing basketball. Timeout. All right. 600 successful businesses were lost. I mean, can we imagine a revenue source of 600 businesses that were lost? All right, the tax base that was lost with six successful 100 businesses. Among those businesses was 21 churches, 21 restaurants, 30 grocery stores, 2 movie theaters, a hospital, a bank, a post office, libraries, a school, law office, and a half a dozen of private airplanes, and even a bus system. All right, now, when we start talking about economics, and I talked about this earlier, how people were raised in the hood, they get an education, and then they turn around, get their degrees, and then they move out the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Then those with financial and who are wealthy comes in and buy the land that you're moving away from, right? Instead of you saying, you know what, I'm going to buy this block. I'm going to buy the next block. I'm going to buy the shopping center. See, we don't think like that as Black people. You know, it's like, oh, we just want to integrate in another community that really don't care nothing about you. But here's the interesting part. I want to talk about how the money circulated. The dollar circulated 36 to 100 times, sometimes taking a year for it to leave the community. Now in 1995, a dollar leaves the community in 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So as a community, since 1995. We can't even keep money within the black community. So there's just no way that the black community can sustain itself because we're spending our dollars elsewhere. So if you buy a piece of property, for instance, up in Woodward Park, River Park, you're going to pay taxes on that piece of property. It stays in that community. Now, you're from West Fresno. You work in West Fresno. You go to church in West Fresno. All right. You buy your gas up north. You buy your groceries up north. So they intentionally make sure that there's no housing in the West Fresno area. Because there's people who want to live in West Fresno, but there's no housing. So you're forced to move. You're forced to stay up north.
Yeah, because to be honest, all you have to do is take a drive from Southwest Fresno to Northwest Fresno, and you see a world of difference. Like, you know, the grocery stores in Tulsa and how you name how much was there, you know, to serve the people. So they really didn't have to go outside of too far outside of the neighborhood unless they just wanted to travel or spread or, you know. But it's a huge difference. It's almost like day and night where you see a whole block line with grocery stores, banks, a school, three elementary schools, like, you know, a mile away from each other. Some of them not even a mile away from each other, like a quarter of a mile away from each other. Gas stations, some of the cheapest stuff, some of the wholesale markets and everything where, you know, you can buy in bulk. You know, other than Smart and Final being in Southwest Fresno, which, you know, they even moved a little further closer to downtown, you know, because they weren't located right there, you know, not when I was growing up in Southwest Fresno. And so it's kind of like, okay, do I want to be able to, like, survive and go and move and have the things I need, you know, there that make the community function? Or, you know, do I do with it being really sparse? You know, it took forever for them to get a nice library in Southwest Fresno. And you know, we were speaking to one of the sisters, and she was like, but they don't even carry stuff about how to manage stress or depression or any of these things, you know. So even with that library, it's still not up to par with some of the bigger libraries in Fresno that's been put in places that haven't just only been developed over the last 10, 15 years. But yet it took forever to get in a library in Southwest Fresno. The food max is not even the same. You know, it seemed like it's not as many employees at the Southwest Fresno food max. There's some price variances between that one and the one in Northwest Fresno. And I actually look for these things, you know. It's just bad because when I was growing up in Southwest Fresno, I remember the time where we had black businesses. You know, I remember the time where everybody, even though you may have thought of it was rough, everybody wanted to get to Southwest Fresno. Everybody wanted to go to Edison, you know. And I just had a lot of fun. So I didn't feel this fear that, you know, everybody tries to, like, oh, you know, you're growing up in Southwest Fresno, you know, oh, that side of town, and you got to be scared. And I never felt that kind of fear growing up. Like, it was fun. We had serious things happen. Crack epidemic hit, and things just went haywire, you know. Kids being put out the house all day long, nothing to do, hungry. And then the guy selling the drugs, well, you know, that becomes like they family because they putting some food in their belly and might even buy some shoes or some nice clothes. And, you know, all he got to do is look out for the police and serve a little, you know, run a little crack to a car, you know. So it's just a lot that needs to be repaired, you know, rebuilt. But that's not the problem. We can rebuild, but the problem is some of those things that's been put in place in order to, like, keep the foot on our neck, you know, so we cannot move the way we know we can move, you know, and people buying into it. And I just want to say a little something about the police and our young black people, you know, because it's not just black boys who are brutalized by police disproportionately. It's also our women and our girls, black girls. Tonight I heard somebody talk and say, hey, you know, we're teaching our boys, you know, when the police stop, you put your hands on the wheel and you don't move them and you don't, you know, you just everything, you just be pinpoint as good as masters tell you, you know, because that's the message I got. Because I'm like, why do we keep saying, why should we even have to be teaching our kids, you better go above and beyond the extremes if you get pulled over for something you don't even know why you're getting pulled over half the time? You know, and most of these stops they make, they do not find drugs and weapons and guns. Do they come across them? Yes, but that's usually off a tip or somebody telling. It's not these random stops that they do to gain a revenue to keep their overtime and their jobs, you know. So it really bothered me because I said, why is nobody asking the opposite question on that? Why is nobody asking, hey, why are we not teaching them how to treat us? Why are we constantly having to make our people dummy down, bow down, lay down, sit down, and nobody's holding them accountable? We do not pay them to make us bow down, lay down, sit down for non-crime, profiling. They try to make themselves out, you know, all the cops, and I'm not trying, I don't hate cops, but I hate bad policies. I hate seeing people being mistreated and abused and just because they're this specific color or because they don't fit into something, you know, or can't do this or can't do that. And it really got under my skin because I'm like, still we teaching our, and I'm not going to say, oh, tell them to slap a cop or sock a cop or anything like that, but our rights, we do have rights. Respect our rights, you know. Respect it. If somebody haven't committed a crime, why are you taking them around the neck, choking them? You know, because they don't want to talk to you. Well, they're not a suspect in the crime. They haven't committed the crime, but because they don't want to talk to you, because you said something a certain way, they think you might have an attitude, they're going to teach you a lesson. I'm tired of the police teaching us lessons. They're not our teachers. We didn't choose them to be teachers, you know? So it's just bothering me because I really have a problem with saying dummy down, sit down. I hate that we have to teach our kids that, and nobody is holding these cops accountable for nothing they do. It's rare and far between when a cop is held accountable for abuses, murder, corruptness, you know. So I don't know. Maybe I'm rambling on. I don't want to let my emotions get the best of me.
Well, you know, you bring up a very good point in regards to community policing. I just think that we have a bunch of lazy people in this society right now that just don't they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to believe in accountability. They just want to be able to continue to go along to get along, you know. And I just think that our children right now, who look up to us as their elders, seeing us lay down to the power structure to be.
And I attended that meeting with Dyer. And the three ladies, this was the outline of the questions. The first lady was like, why when we have, why when there's a murder of a colored person, why is it treated like they don't matter? Why are they given the narrative, oh, this was a gang member, or this, we think this is gang involved, when in fact these victims of murder were not gang involved? But when they put that, when they're allowed to put that out there, that desensitizes people to the injustice. You know, that makes them say, oh, well, this person, they were living that life, or this is what they were doing, so they lived that life. Those are some consequences of living that life. When, in fact, this young person was going to school, about to graduate, not in a gang. And so that was one line of questioning. The second line of questioning had to deal with homelessness. Why are these homeless people being abused, their property being improperly booked or destroyed or taken? Why are they being threatened? I have proof. This person, you know, has supposedly brought proof on a little thumb drive. She wasn't allowed to show it. So that was the second line of questioning. And then the third line of questioning had to do with the police culture. You know, you're training them to kill and you're training them to treat everybody like a criminal, especially when they putting their own biases into it and racism into it and targeting people of color, you know, men, but also our black women, because our black women are victims of police brutality and murder. So those were the three lines of questioning. How are you going to change that culture where we're respected like human beings, where we're respected like the people that do pay for your salaries? And Dyer answered them in certain ways. He was like, well, we have this good 90-something percent of solving murders. But he sounded like a hypocrite, because sitting right there in that room was four unsolved murders. And if you went across the street and added the one across the street, it was five unsolved murders. Five unsolved murders sitting right there in that room, all occurring within the last 5 years, but you got the nerve to say that y'all solved 90% of murders, of homicides? He sounded like a hypocrite. He really had no response to the lady about the homelessness. And then he really went on about a local cop who, you know, here, who in Southwest Fresno, who is out there, you know, being what you would want a law enforcement official to be, interacting with the community, connecting, trying to make those relationships. That's all wonderful and great, but that has nothing to do with all these other officers that are being brought up under this culture. You know, and if that other officer is doing so great in Southwest Fresno, he needs to be the chief of police and Dyer needs to get out. So, you know, and so he felt that because of that line of questioning that he was being ambushed, and he said he would have brought officers to as backup, but also to back him up on, you know, what he was saying, how great the cops were doing and how they were holding them accountable. And he refused to do any more meetings after that, by the way, which was to me a very cowardly move and irresponsible of someone who is indebted to answer to the community about how these officers are treating the citizens and the people that, you know, pay their salaries. A lot of people won't speak up because they seem to forget that it's the tax dollars that pay for that, because the police department controlled half of the city's budget. So they feel like the cops are paying them, the ones that are selling out, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things that I look at right now is that, you know, we have to understand where police brutality comes from, the culture of police. Police came from the plantation master and slavery, and it was called slave patrol.
even in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, I have never known of an entire black created police department here in America. It was all created from slavery. And I think that the mindset is still set. So when we look at Tulsa, Oklahoma, 1921, those brothers who came out of the war had their guns and they kept their guns at home. But it was a white community across the track that policed the black community and policed their community. And so that's why in the documentary you would hear that the white sheriff say, "Give me your gun. Give me your gun." And he would not give him his gun. But we're here again with Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter show. I just want to give a shout out to a couple of people here that's tuning in. Maria Else, want to thank her for tuning in. Cheryl Johnson, thank you for tuning in. Sherry Martinez, thank you for tuning in. Dr. Stephen Morrison, thank you. McCoy, thank you for tuning in. Brother Harris, thank you for tuning in. Gomez, thank you for tuning in. Liddell, thank you for tuning in. Young, thank you for tuning in. And we have a statement here. Someone wrote, "Anything too strong, strong mind, body, and soul, this system works to weaken in the black and brown community. You would have to buy it like a person with a ghost written anonymous." So what are we saying here tonight? We're saying that, number one, we have to protect our community. I think that one of the things that I've learned with Tulsa, Oklahoma, is that our black people fought. They just didn't lay down. They fought and they died. They fought and they died for their community because they believed in their community. And I have a lot of respect for a man who stands for something. I have a lot of respect for men who protect a woman. I just do. I mean, it's one of the things in my life right now to protect children and to protect women. And it doesn't even have, you know, it doesn't even have anything to do with me knowing them. It's just the right thing to do. And I feel that we don't, especially the black woman, she doesn't get her enough respect. You know, she was abused and tortured just like the black man was in slavery. You know, in the Freedom School, you know, we teach black history, and we have to keep it real. You know, we have to keep it 100. You know, I think that when we look at slavery, you know, we have to understand that slavery was to send fear into to black folk. You know, that's why when you look at different, say Roots, for instance, you know, Roots, when they were whipping the young man behind, you know, and he said, "What is your name?" You know, "The name is Toby." You know, "No, my name is Kunta." And so when he kept trying to stand for who he was as a black man in front of his community, that he was being dehumanize, belittle, whipped, you know, in front of his community, he stood long as he could, and that's the thing that this same system wants to break strong men. It wants to break strong women, and it does it with fear. It does it with fear, okay? And that's why we don't have the men standing up like we're supposed to have today, standing up for the black community. Where are they? I would really like for someone to tell me, where are the strong black men in this community that speak truth to power and that will stand up for our children and stand up for our black women in this community? That's the difference between 1921 and today. Our ancestors stood together as a whole, okay, not individual, right? Because they were concerned about the next door neighbors as well as across the street. Today, we're only just concerned about my household and that's it. So I think our caller, you know, she was on point when she started talking about, you know, hey, this is about police accountability, you know? We have unsolved murders in Fresno. Fresno has all these cameras put up all over the city. I mean, all over the city, all over West Fresno. And we spend millions and trillions of dollars to have a big old warehouse full of big screens like you're going to Edwards Theater, watching everybody as they drive down the street. And the community is no more safer than not having them. I mean, the Black Panther Party police their own community. That's why they was assassinated, because they police their own community. Anytime you start doing things on an individual level, you become a target. You become a target. Just like to give a few more shout-outs right now. I want to thank Latanya, that's sweet. Thank you for tuning in. Kevin Nutt Sr., thank you for tuning in. Jason Campbell, thank you for tuning in. And so you with Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show, 619-924-0872. 619-924-0872. Please call in. We're talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma tonight. Black Wall Street here tonight. Why was it destroyed? You know, who destroyed it? Why was it destroyed? You know, what can we do to build another black community like Tulsa, Oklahoma, which was called Little Africa? You know, I'm going to keep blowing a bugle saying, you know, where is our black men? I see a lot of black men doing a lot of positive things in Fresno, a lot of positive things. But the million-dollar question that I ask, why black men cannot work together collectively as a whole? That's the question. You know, I asked for 20 black men to come to the table. I was going to feed them breakfast. They had breakfast. And out of 20 not scared black men, I got two. Two. Now, the women is ready to walk the hood. But I told them, no, this is about the men right now. So I told the women, fine, we can't get the men to walk the hood, then we'll let the women do it. We'll support you. We'll whatever we need to do. Because I'm not into who's getting the credit. I'm into getting the job done. And our young men, our young women, and our community need to see us out there. See, you can forget about them coming to church. It ain't gonna happen. That's what you're thinking? It's not gonna happen. We have to go out there where they are and build trust with them. That's where this is right now. That's where this is right now. So I want to thank you all for tuning in tonight. We had a great discussion about Tulsa, Oklahoma. We had a great discussion about the police department. We're going to have a hell show that's going to be coming up soon. We're going to have a hell show coming up soon to talk about health, to talk about should we be eating meat, should we not be eating meat, should we be drinking milk, should we not be drinking milk. It's going to be a controversial show. Our sister Denise is going to be leading that conversation. I believe on Wednesday night we have Sister Eileen from the West Federal Democratic Club who will be talking about politics, who's the current president there. You know, so we're gonna be bringing some folks on to really chop it up and to really give some knowledge and consciousness about what's going on in our community. Like to see more people call in. Not sure if you're scared to call in or what the issue may be, but you know, we're gonna keep rolling. We do have callers that call from back east to chime in sometime. But we're trying to mobilize Fresno. There's a lot of fear in Fresno. There's a lot of division in Fresno, and we're trying to change that narrative. So this is Dr. Harris. We're going to go ahead and sign out tonight. And I want to wish you all well. I want to thank you for tuning in to our show. Also, just to let you know, I did make a flyer that you can pass around to let our people know about the radio show. And so we're going to go ahead and play this here.